The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Brian, Judge Frisch, the Honorable Matthew E. Johnson presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the attorneys for the first case and other persons in the virtual gallery. For the sake of the audio recording, I will say that today's date is July 28, 2021. This panel of the court today has five cases on its calendar, two of which are set for oral argument, and three of which will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. The first case set for oral argument is number A21-166, Leonard Zimmer and Virginia Zimmer versus Pine Lake Township. Counsel are experienced in our procedures at the Court of Appeals. They're practically the same, even though we are using Zoom platform. If you should be able to see the time clock on your screen if you have the gallery view or another view that allows that. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and Mr. Mack, counsel for appellant, will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. Counsel for appellant, you may begin by introducing yourself and your clients, and then you may begin your argument.
Yes, John Mack, counsel for the appellant Zimmers. May it please the court. First of all, let me ask, can everybody hear me? Because sometimes these Zooms become problematical. In 2018, the Zimmers brought an action for declaratory judgment to declare that the Plantain Trail was in fact a township road. Judge Harrington dismissed the case, not because it didn't state a cause of action on its own, but because it should have been brought under Minnesota Statute 16316. In 2020, the Zimmers brought the present action, attempting to have the township road declared to be a township road. They had gone to the township and the township said, we're not going to maintain Plantain Trail. And the reason we aren't going to maintain Plantain Trail is we don't think we own it. Now, there are two reasons why the 2018 determination by Judge Harrington doesn't control the present action by the Zimmers.
Excuse me, Mr. Mack, before you get to that piece of the argument, I think for me, the question, first question is, what is the legal theory on which the remedy in the complaint is based? And there's more than one type of relief in the complaint, so the answer may depend on which type of relief we're talking about. So let me separate that out very specifically. What paragraph in the complaint sets forth the legal theory on which the appellants sought to declare Plantain Trail a town road?
I can't give you the exact number because I don't have it before me, but the theory is that I described the town road and I indicated that there is a right under 160.05 to have the town road declared to be the property of the township. So it's based upon 160.05. Now to go back to the issue.
If I could, because I think in order to understand whether there's jurisdiction, we have to know what the legal basis was, because if the jurisdiction question turns on whether or not there's a separate statutory remedy that's exclusive, and that's why you don't have jurisdiction, then we have to know if that's the right legal theory. And so you're saying that the complaint was based on subdivision 160.05.
Right.
Is that right?
That's true.
Okay. And you're not able to point to a specific paragraph in the complaint that states that? I'm just clarifying if that's true or not. Okay. And if not, that's fine. I'm sure we can find it. But okay. So you don't know the number or the paragraph number?
No, but I can look.
That's okay. I don't want to take up your time with that, because I do know that the complaint alleges that there are other, or would you agree that there are other ways that a road can become a public road? Or I should be more specific, because the statute has definitions for each of these things. There's a definition for town road, yes. Separate definition for county highway,
right,
or roadway. So we're talking about a town road because the county's not a party here. So the question is, Are there multiple ways in which a road can become a town road other than 160.05?
I think there probably is a common law way that it can be by common law dedication. That's really not the route that we're going, but I think that there are two ways, 160.05 and common law dedication. Getting on to the jurisdictional issue here, there are two reasons why Judge Harrington's determination is not dispositive. First, of course, 3 years have intervened between 2018 and 2021, and the situation could change in that time. 160.05 and common law dedication, for that matter, are dynamic. What may have been untrue in 2018 could become true by user in the meantime. So these are not the same complaints. They're not identical. They're not dedicated to the same thing. The second reason why res judicata does not apply and why the 2018 determination is not dispositive is because Judge Harrington's order was a dismissal. It wasn't an adjudication on the merits. And the most recent determination was not a determination on the merits. It was a Rule 12 dismissal. In order to have res judicata and collateral estoppel, which are in this case pretty much the same thing, you have to have a determination on the merits. There was not a determination on the merits here. I want to go into the practical effect here. Obviously, the Zimmers, and for that matter, any citizen of the township, has a right to try to get the township to maintain its roads. How can it do so? Let's suppose that the court says here today, either it's a res judicata issue or you lose for various reasons. Then suppose we go back to the township and say, township, please maintain this. This is your road. They say, we aren't going to maintain it because it isn't your road. Say we appeal that and we say we have a right to have them maintain it. And then the Court of Appeals may very well say, sorry, 163.16 is not a vehicle for determining who owns it. Now, I submit that the Zimmers have an absolute right to have some kind of a determination on the merits of whether or not that is a township road so that it can be maintained. And it should not be the case that there's no possible way that they can do that. That, of course, is also one of the reasons why the distance in time from the 2018 order takes us out from res judicata. I submit that 163.16 is a maintenance statute. There's probably no other way to determine the ownership of Plantain Trail other than a deck action.
Well, if I can interrupt here, because I think that I have a couple of questions about section 163. You're saying that you don't think it's a maintenance statute only, but there is a provision, and this is something that the district court looked to in the first dismissal regarding the establishment of, in this case, because section 163 relates to county highways, and it looked to 163.13, saying that because both parties already agree that it is a public road, 163.13 would not apply. But the question I have for you is, it seems that because 163 includes these provisions at 163.13, it's not just a maintenance statute. It's also a statute that has some specific provisions for establishing whether a road is a county highway. Would you agree that it's not just a maintenance statute, that it also has this provision to establish a road? And I'll read it to you. Any person who owns real estate in the county may petition the county board to establish, as separate from alter and vacate, to establish a county highway. So you'd agree or not that that is more than a maintenance statute?
Well, the problem is, and frankly, I think the issue is that it's ambiguous as to whether it's a establishment statute, because suburban estates requires that a complaint address itself to the condition of, quote, a described town road in the town under 163.16. So I think that there is a probable argument that this is in fact not a town road, but I have a request of the Court of Appeals. If the Court of Appeals decides that, as a matter of fact, res judicata applies, or if the Court of Appeal decides that this is appropriate under 163.16, it should say so. Because if we lose at the Court of Appeals level, obviously we're going to go back to the township. We don't want to be in a position where if the township says, sorry, we don't own the road and we have no remedy. I submit that I suspect 163.16 is not the exclusive vehicle for determining the maintenance of a township road, as I indicated earlier.
Since you mentioned township road, let me ask this question too, because I was confused as to why it's not in the complaint, it's not in your brief, but there's a separate statute that applies to town roads. 163 applies to county highways. 164 applies to town roads. And there are different definitions in section 160 listing those subdivisions, and subdivision 17 defining a county highway is not what it seems like the complaint is addressing at all. It seems like the complaint is addressing something else. Given the nature of Plantain Trail, it doesn't seem to fit the definition of a county highway. So I'm wondering, under 164, not 163, should we be looking to the provisions of that section to determine, number one, provisions regarding establishment, and number two, provisions regarding maintenance, because those are the two remedies you're seeking in your complaint. And it would be helpful if we knew what statute you meant, but it's not listed in the complaint. There's no statute in the complaint. Not 160, not 163, not 164. So it would be helpful to know the theory, the legal theory, but let's assume it is a town road and I'm able to guess at which applicable statute based on the definitions in section 160 applies. Why aren't we considering 164 instead of 163 here?
Yeah, well, let me go into the nature of my complaint. Remember that this was dismissed very quickly, and it was dismissed on res judicata grounds, basically. So this case never had the opportunity to flesh out, nor was this brought in the motion to dismiss by the township in this case, of which statutes exactly applied. Certainly, there's nothing in the deck statute that says I have to, in my complaint, refer to the statute. And I certainly refer to township and township roads. Had this been a motion for summary judgment or had discovery gone forth, obviously this would have been fleshed out. But I think I have enough in the complaint to allow this court to take a look at both 163, 164, and 160.05. The issue here
Let me add one to you, because it does seem the one that is most clear to me based on the complaint is not 164, 163. It seems it's more about the common law. You do have a paragraph in the complaint regarding the dedication of this to the public. And so it seems like that provision may be in addition to the statutory basis. Am I right?
That's true. So it seems to me that the court in this case should have allowed the case to go forward, first to flesh out these issues, second to determine whether or not there has been enough of a change between 2018 and 2021 that Judge Harrington's determination should not apply. Now, obviously, I think that Judge Harrington was wrong, but obviously the case wasn't appealed. So there has to be some difference between the 2018 complaint and this one, and there is. There's a difference in time. Also, there has to be a difference in type of determination, and I submit that the res judicata issue is finessed by the fact that there was no determination on the merits. It can be argued, and I suspect Judge Brian, you're thinking to yourself, this complaint could have been drafted better. Well, perhaps it could have, but the rules are that you can have a minimal pleading, and then if there is a problem with the pleading, it can be mopped up. But that's not what the judge did in this case. Rather, he said, this case has already been determined, and I'm therefore just going to follow Judge Harrington and throw the case out.
Well, Mr. Mack, what is the obligation by rule for petitioners when they file a complaint? What do they have to do to make it clear the basis for their relief? Do they have to do something in their complaint?
Yeah, but they have to allege facts. The issue is, have they alleged sufficient facts that under some legal theory they could prevail? They don't have to set forth their legal theory. And they did set forth in general terms their legal theory. They didn't do it in specifics. But if the facts make out a viable cause of action, then the court has to go forward, even if the complaint doesn't spell out the theory. Any other questions? That's pretty much my time.
Sorry for the delay. It appears there are no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Mack. Counsel for respondent, you may begin by introducing yourself and your client and then begin.
May it please the court, my name is Ken Bayless. I represent Pine Lake Township. The trial court properly determined that the complaint in this case fails to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. There are two primary arguments that the appellants are making here. The first one relates to 160.05.
I don't like to interrupt, but I can't hear you, Mr. Bayless.
I'm actually having a difficult time hearing you as well, sir.
Well, that's exactly the problem. Okay. Would you like me to start over, Your Honor?
Sure. And it looks like the clock is at 15, so...
Okay. My apologies.
You may begin again.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mack, for bringing that to my attention. May it please the court, my name is Ken Bayless, and I represent Pine Lake Township. The trial court properly determined that the complaint in this case failed to state a claim upon which relief could be granted. There are two primary theories that appellants are relying upon in support of their claims. The first one is 160.05, and the second is 163.16, which in their reply brief and in their principal brief, they reluctantly concede is also implicated in their arguments here. With respect to the first claim that they're making, that they are now making, 160.05, this complaint simply fails to state a claim upon which relief can be granted under 160.05.
If I can jump in for a second. The court's order from January 19th, 2021, dismissing the complaint. You're saying that this is a statement, and there's not much to go on here, right? There's a one paragraph memo. What about that memo are you looking to conclude that the district court dismissed for failure to state a claim?
We brought a motion for failure to state a claim. Our motion was...
I understand that, but I'm asking, to the extent that there is a distinction between addressing jurisdiction and addressing failure to state a claim separate from jurisdiction, it seems that if you're looking at collateral estoppel or res judicata, that's a jurisdictional question. And in 2018, the district court was very clear. They didn't dismiss that complaint for failure to state a claim. So there wasn't a decision on the merits in 2018 by the district court. There may have been a decision on the merits by some other body, such as the county board. But it looks like, as I'm reading this one paragraph memorandum from 2021, dismissing the second complaint, and you're saying that this is a dismissal for failure to state a claim. My question is, where in that are you looking to reach that conclusion?
The trial court granted our motion to dismiss, but did not specifically in its memorandum address that issue. We argued it in our papers at pages 12 to 14 of our motion papers, and pointed out that they haven't stated a 160.05 claim. Now, the trial court was at a disadvantage that was caused by the appellants here, because the complaint that the trial court was looking at doesn't have any reference to 160.05. So the trial court had to, on its own, try to figure out what statute, if any, this particular complaint referenced. In this case, 160.05 is nowhere mentioned in the complaint. And that could be forgivable under one condition, and that is that appellants took the elements of 160.05 and actually included them in their complaint. But they didn't even include the elements of 160.05 in their complaint. If you look at the key element of 160.05, which is that the governmental entity kept in repair the road for 6 continuous years as a public road, that's not alleged in the complaint. At paragraph 5 of the complaint, they do make an allegation about some maintenance, but they don't make the allegation of 6 years, they don't make the allegation of continuous use, and they don't specifically refer anywhere to 160.05. So the complaint simply does not state that.
They do, but it does make a conclusory allegation that it's a public road, right?
Well, right, but that would be like saying I'm entitled to money in a complaint involving an automobile accident where I'm saying, you know, there was a car crash and I'm entitled, a defendant and
I think
the
it's
court,
more like saying there was a contract and it was breached and not saying what particular provision of the contract was breached.
Right,
which would probably be sufficient under Rule 12.
Right, but they haven't said it's a contract because they haven't said 160.05. Plus, they haven't, and that again could be forgivable if they allege the elements of contract, namely acceptance and breach and consideration, but they haven't alleged the elements of 160.05.
Mr. Bayless, in 2018, the district court had a finding, I'll call it a finding, we might disagree about the how I'm characterizing it, but in 2018, the district court made a finding that it seems both parties agreed that it was a town road or a public road. Well, and that's why section 163.16 did not apply according to the page 3 of the 2018 memorandum. Do you agree that it is a public road under some theory, whether it's common law theory or it's, and that's a different question than the maintenance question. It's sort of, if you look at the two parts of the complaint, the first is the declaratory judgment to declare this a public road. If there's no dispute, then I'm not sure that statement or that request is as important as the maintenance request. So do you agree that at least in 2018, the dedication of Plantain Trail and decades of public use created a town road without any action needed by a governmental authority? Because that's word for word what the district court found.
Certainly not. That didn't happen in 2018, and there's no place in the record that you will find that. What has been conceded is that it's a public road. And the key point here is the distinction between a public road and a public road that the township has an obligation to maintain. The case law, if you look at the suburban estates case, makes that very distinction. It says you can make it a public road. If I have property, I can deed it as the landowner did here in 2016 and make it public. That's one thing, that's step one. Step two is, do you make it a township road? So the question of whether it's a public road is different than the question of whether it's a public road that the governmental entity has an obligation to maintain. And if you look at the suburban estates case, it talks about our cases have consistently held that the municipality may determine the time it will open a street and assume the maintenance thereof. So people all the time want to give roads to cities and counties and townships, but the suburban estates case and other Supreme Court precedent, including Bolin v. Glass, say they don't have to take them until they want to. And that's what's going on here. So if you look at the case law, the Supreme Court has said that they don't have to take it. As to whether it was a public road, in what happened here was that it was deeded by the prior landowner, a developer. I mean, what ends up happening in these cases is that they're paying taxes on this street that they still own, and they want to get rid of it. They don't want to pay taxes anymore. So they deed it to the public. And when that happens, then there's this question of, does the township have to accept it? The Minnesota Supreme Court has established a procedure for how you do this, and that is contained wholly within the suburban estates case. The suburban estates case says, step one, you go to the town board. and the town board makes a determination based upon the factors that are set forth in Suburban Estates. Step two, that goes to the county board, and then the county board makes a decision as well. Step three, it goes by writ of certiorari to the appellate courts. The Minnesota Supreme Court has said that when there's a dispute like this, it goes through that process, period. So that pertains both to the question of the maintenance, and it goes to the question of whether the township is actually the road authority. Because in Suburban Estates, you were dealing with a platted road, just like here, where they gave by deed to the public. And then the question is, okay, is the township going to accept it? So Suburban Estates says, if it's an action to compel the governmental entity to accept the road, you have to go through that process. And plaintiff didn't go through that process back in 2018, and that's why the trial court rejected it, and didn't go through that process again. And they didn't pursue their appeal remedies either. I mean, when the county board decided back in before 2018 that they didn't want to approve it, they didn't take an appeal from that. So there were all those problems. But the fundamental problem in this case, as we get back to it, is here we are at the Court of Appeals trying to piece together for the appellants what it is that they're alleging in the complaint. And the standards on a Rule 12 motion are pretty slim, I agree. But at least you have to do one of two things. Either have to, if it's a statutory cause of action, you have to say what the statute is. And if it's not, if you're not going to say what the statute is, at least allege the elements of the cause of action. I heard counsel say, we don't have to set forth the legal theory. That's bizarre. I mean, the notion that you don't have to set forth your legal theory in a complaint is contrary to the law. That's the whole purpose of Rule 12. If a party hasn't stated their legal theory, an opposing party is entitled to dismissal. So they haven't done it. The basic problem is that they haven't alleged the specific basis in their complaint. The court asked the question, Judge Brian asked, are there multiple ways to create a township road? Now, appellant's counsel says, we're helpless. We can't do anything. We need your help. The reality is the law provides them a number of avenues by which they can create a township road. One is they can go down the road of common law dedication. But the important thing about common law dedication is even if you have common law dedication, you don't have a township road until the township accepts it. Common law dedication just gets you through that first step. You've got a public road. So after common law dedication, then the question is, okay, does the township then go on to accept the road? And so, plus, I hear counsel in this argument saying two contradictory things. In the early portion of appellant's argument, he said the words, that's not the road we're going down, in referring to common law dedication. Then in response to Judge Brian's question, I hear, well, yeah, that's right, Your Honor. That's what we're arguing, but it's not alleged in the complaint.
What I'm hearing you say, and maybe you're not saying this, but it's what I'm gathering, is that it doesn't matter what process or under what theory the appellant pursues, the way to get before a tribunal is by writ of certiorari following the county's adverse or the city's adverse decision. Is that right? Is that what you're saying? That the district court never has jurisdiction under these circumstances?
That's what the Minnesota Supreme Court has said in Suburban Estates. And if you look at Suburban Estates, the Minnesota Supreme Court expressly states in a dispute about how do you force a township to obtain a road authority over a road, it goes through that process and says, first you go to the township, then you go to the county board. Then if the county board is an adverse decision, you have a right to appeal through writ of certiorari. That's what thus spake the Minnesota Supreme Court.
And your position is that it doesn't matter what theory the appellant pursued, under what statutory provisions that
I wouldn't go that far, because there is the process under which they can make an initial petition for a road. So that the landowners can get together a certain number of them and they can file a petition with the county board. In addition, I want to bring the court's attention. Judge Brian asked an excellent question about Chapter 164 and its applicability. And if you want to see how it's supposed to work, look at 164.15. 164.15 is a statute that talks about, okay, you're a developer. you have this road that was associated with the development. Now you want to get rid of it. What do you do? And it says, well, you can deed it to the township. But then what it says is the way that works is the township has to accept it by resolution under 164.15. So that's another way that you could create it. And I would agree that if that was the process someone was trying to go through, they presented the deed and then they said, they asked the township board to pass a resolution, then we might have a different result.
Mr. Bayless, now that we're talking about 164 a little bit, I'd like to ask, there are differences between 164 and 163. And as I look at suburban estates, it may be that under section 163, the language of 163.16 is clear that that is the exclusive remedy for someone seeking to require maintenance. And they have to go through that process and the district court has no jurisdiction unless it's through certiorari. I don't see something similar to that in section 164. 164 has a section about appeals, but that's related only to appealing some assessment of damages that is made by the township upon accepting something, if you want to, accepting authority, if you want to call it that, over a road, and then maintaining the road. If there are damages to anybody along the road, then there's a way that they have to, a requirement they assess, and then there's an appeal of that. But there isn't anything similar to 163.16 in section 164. And again, I don't see how under the definitions in 160, 163 is what we're talking about here, because that's about a county highway and there's a town road that's subject to different provisions. So what is it about suburban estates or the language of 164 that makes you conclude that is the only, that is the exclusive remedy? Because that to me is the jurisdictional question, is what is the exclusive remedy to get maintenance?
I see I'm out of time. May I respond to the question?
Yes, you may. Please take as much time as you need.
Okay. First of all, I'd say that if you look at the suburban estates case, you are actually dealing with a township and you're talking about a township road. So it's not just that suburban estates would apply to counties, it applies to townships. So the Supreme Court has said that in the event that someone wants increased maintenance on a road and or wants a road to become a township road, they need to go through the process stated in suburban estates. And on that point, the suburban estates case stands for the proposition that they not only have to do that in cases involving, hey, I want more maintenance, but they also have to do it in cases of, hey, I want you to agree that you're the road authority. With respect to 164, to the extent that they're now claiming that, well, then let them go through that process. They haven't gone through that process. They don't allege the predicates to that process. Indeed, though, if there were any predicates, they occurred before the 2018 litigation. In other words, going to the township board, filing a petition, doing any of those things. If there were such a process that they went through, then they'd have whatever statutory process is provided for by 164, if indeed it did apply. I would suggest, for instance, if they went through 164.15 and then they were dissatisfied with their process, then they might have certain rights. But they haven't alleged 164.15, they haven't referenced it, and it's just not applicable to the facts as contained in the complaint. Because the complaint fails to state a claim upon which relief can be granted, I'd ask that the court affirm the decision of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Bayless. Mr. Mack, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
I'd like the court to take a look at Rule 8.01, which is on sufficiency of pleadings. It says, quote, a pleading which sets forth a claim for relief, whether an original claim, counterclaim, cross-claim, or third-party claim, shall contain a short and plain statement of the claim showing that the pleader is entitled to relief and a demand for judgment for the relief sought. Obviously, we make a demand in the ad damnum clause. Now look at paragraph 5 of my complaint. Plantain Trail has also been dedicated as a public road to Pine Lake Township by deed dated December 8, 2016, and Pine Lake Township, rather than rejecting that dedication, has repaired and maintained that road and used it as a turnaround for its snow removal equipment. Therefore, it seems to me that the township has accepted it. Now they claim that they didn't, and we have to go through a different process. But I submit that that's not what the law requires. I've made it, it's true, of course, that this could have been fleshed out if it hadn't been immediately rejected under Rule 12 and if the judge had made a more thorough finding. But I think the matter should go back to the court for clarification and for a full and fair hearing on it. The other thing I would ask of this court is if this court makes the determination that there was an exclusive remedy that we did not take, it should say so, so that we can make it and come back to the court again. But hopefully that won't have to happen, because hopefully this matter should be reversed and remanded. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
So if we remanded it, and consistent, I think, with Walsh versus U.S. Bank, for you to make a more definite statement in the complaint, what would that more definite statement be?
It would set forth the statutes or statute upon which we're relying.
Which are?
160.05, probably 164. And it would also set forth the elements of common law dedication and common law acceptance.
Thank you.
It appears there are no further questions. Thank you to both of the attorneys for your excellent arguments. The case is now submitted, and the court will issue its opinion within 90 days.